let's resume and take up item 412.
Item 412, amend code to eliminate barriers to accessing administrative appeal processes, including establishing a minimum notice requirement and limiting fees charged to initiate an appeal.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Auditor Caballero.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I am City Auditor Mary Hall Caballero, and with me today from my office are Ombudsman Margie Solinger and Hearings Officer Gregory Frank. I'm also joined by Dante James, the Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. It is fundamental to good government that people who are materially affected by government actions are afforded the opportunity to contest them. Sometimes due process is required by law, and at other times we decide to extend it based on a broader sense of what justice and fairness require. The particular avenues to contest a government action are established by City Council. You and your predecessors have created nearly 200 appeal options throughout City Code, roughly 70 of which direct appellants to the hearings office, which is located in the auditor's office. The purpose of providing administrative appeals is to create value for both the public and the city through increased transparency and accountability. A cost-effective venue for disputes to be aired reduces the need for them to be litigated in court or the media, which are alternatives that often reinforce perceptions that government can't be trusted to treat people fairly. Appeal hearings provide other benefits as well. They can serve as early warning signs when policy implementation needs corrective action. They also can act as a check on bureaus if discretionary decisions lead to unfair outcomes. Those benefits are undermined, however, when barriers keep the public from accessing their appeal rights. One barrier is not knowing an appeal right exists or how to exercise it. Currently, there is no standard requirement that bureaus notify people that they can appeal the decision. Another obstacle is the cost of admission. In some cases, bureaus charge more than $1,300 to the person who wants to appeal, a fee that is often higher than the amount in dispute. Our purpose today is to enlist your help in clearing the path to administrative appeals and ensuring that the intent for providing them is not subverted. It is up to the people who are materially affected by an action to decide if they want to challenge it through an established review process. They can't access an appeal right granted by council if they don't know it exists or if the fee is unaffordable or economically irrational. An untenable consequence of these barriers is that people of modest means are disproportionately harmed, effectively closed off from their right to be heard. In my role as city auditor, I intend to bring attention to these types of inequitable outcomes and make recommendations to help the city move closer to its equity goals. I confess I didn't expect to find such a pressing example in my own office, and I appreciate the Ombudsman's persistence in finding a solution. More than 20 years ago, our predecessors entered into an agreement to locate the city's hearings office in the auditor's office. Although it acts on behalf of council, the hearings office needs an independent home and administrative support, which is provided by my office. I believe this arrangement is beneficial, but the auditor's office cannot continue as a partner if the inequitable outcomes and obstacles to justice are not removed. With that in mind, I am proposing changes that will remove the barriers, ensure the intent for providing appeals is achieved, and fully realize the important institutional and public benefits associated with them. Ombudsman Solinger will now walk you through the proposal and respond to concerns we heard during its development. She will be followed by testimony from Director James and Hearings Officer Frank. We also have four guests to address the council, and I will introduce them after we take any questions that you have.
Thank you.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Margie Solinger. I'm the Ombudsman for the City of Portland. And I have to say, after the Oscar award-winning PowerPoint before this, I feel like this might get
pressure's
a Razzie.
On.
I know. But hopefully it does the job.
You can go for best supporting data or
there
something.
There you go. All right. So the main components of the ordinance before you today are creating a minimum notice requirement that applies citywide, and limiting the filing fees for appeals that are heard by the hearings office. So it's important to note that these two components have different proposed scopes. The minimum notice would apply to all 200 or so appeal avenues within the city, and the fee cap would apply just to the 70 or so that go to the hearings office. Before I get into the details of the ordinance, I want to take a step back first and provide some general background information. I'll also discuss problems with the status quo, offer some specific examples, and answer any questions you might have. So administrative appeals exist for most of the bureaus and functions that interact directly with the public. There's a lot of variety in how these appeals are structured, both across and within bureaus. I'm going to show you a few examples just to give you a sense of what they look like. And they're all going to start the same way, with some sort of bureau decision that triggers an appeal right. This first one is an example of an appeal process that can eventually end up at council. One example that you might be familiar with are the noise variance appeals. They first have to go through some sort of review board decision, and then the person can challenge that before council under Title 18. Another example are the sidewalk assessment remonstrances. Under Title 17, they follow the same structure. This next example is of an appeals avenue that goes to an appeals board or commission. These boards and commissions are generally comprised of staff or volunteers or hybrid of the two. And under this structure, the first level of review would go to the bureau or division director. One example that uses this structure are the protests of certain contract awards under Title 5. Another example are the fire marshal citation appeals under Title 31. This slide shows the two different ways appeals can get to the auditor's hearings office. The left side shows the more indirect route, where there is a bureau level review prior to an appeal to the hearings office. An example of this is when somebody wants to dispute their utility bill, they can bring that complaint to the Administrative Review Commission, and if they disagree with that determination, they can go on to the hearings office. On the right side of the slide shows the direct appeal to the hearings office, and this might happen when the chief traffic engineer might revoke somebody's parking permit, and then they could take that challenge to the hearings office directly. The problem with the current landscape of appeals is that there are no baseline standards to ensure that all of these different types of appeals, no matter how they're structured, are still accessible. Right now, there's no baseline requirement that the city actually tell people when they can appeal something, and in the absence of minimum standards, there's a wide variety of practices. So this is an example of where notice was not given. And this is a typical letter that goes out when the Bureau of Environmental Services charges a property owner for a sewer connection. It's basically just a bill that says you owe the city this amount, you have to pay within 90 days, and here's where to send your payment. This charge by the city is actually appealable, but there's nothing in this letter to indicate that City Council has given the property owner the right to appeal. Now, one of our invited presenters today has personal experience getting this type of letter, so I'll let him describe in his testimony what he had to go through to access his appeal process. So Exhibit A of your package is the proposed solution to this problem and contains a new chapter for Title 3 setting out a minimum notice requirement. I'm going to walk you through the main components of it. There's a definitional section which explains the scope of the requirements application. It's meant to apply to any code or rule-based chance that the public has to appeal a city decision. It does not apply to land use because notification is already governed by a complex regulatory scheme, so on the advice of the city attorney's office, we exempted it. The two main elements of minimum notice are just that it's timely and adequate. And timely just means that we want to tell people about their right to appeal right around the time when that right is triggered. We want to avoid telling people right before the time to appeal expires, after it expires, and we really want to avoid not telling people at all. Adequate notice just means that we're giving people enough information about the underlying decision so that they can determine whether or not they want to challenge it. And we also tell them enough information about the logistics of filing an appeal so they know how to invoke it. We've also proposed language in Title 22 that gives the hearings office the ability to enforce the proposed notice requirement for appeals that go before it. So actually providing this sort of minimum notice should be easy and inexpensive. Some bureaus already do it well using a standard letter. Now, I know this is hard to see, but this is an example from the Bureau of Development Services Code Enforcement Program. In this type of case, a property owner would get a 3-page letter. The first 2 pages are the notice of violation, including a specific list of violations. And on the right side is the standard information sheet that accompanies the notice of violation. And I'm going to magnify that section on the next slide. So this part of the information sheet describes the first step of the appeal process, which is an administrative review. And so here it tells you about the right to appeal, tells you how much it costs, how many days to file, and where to file the appeal. So that's minimum notice in a nutshell. I'm going to switch gears now and talk about the appeal filing fees. So the problem with the status quo on this issue is that there's no codified requirement that appeal filing fees be set at an affordable or reasonable amount. Currently, the cost to file to the public to file an appeal varies widely, and the filing fee for some appeals is over $1,300. To put those fees in perspective, it costs significantly less to file for a circuit court writ of review, which is around $250, and it costs four times less to petition the United States Supreme Court than to appeal some of the city's administrative decisions. These fees mean that many members of our community cannot afford to use their appeal rights even if they do know about them. 36% of Multnomah County residents do not have enough income to meet their basic needs, let alone afford the city's appeal fees. Put another way, for a person living below the federal poverty line, they would have to pay more than 11% of their annual income in order to appeal some types of city decisions. And for someone like the auditor who makes the big bucks, it would be the equivalent impact of a $12,188 fee. The ordinance before you today is focused on the fees for the hearings office appeals because that's where we're seeing the highest fees charged to the public, and because we think the high fees are largely driven by the funding structure of the hearings office, which I've tried to outline on this slide. The way it works generally is that the hearings office has to use an internal cost recovery model for appeal hearings. So going from left to right, you'll see that the hearings office charges the Bureau for an appeal hearing. The 1368 at the top there is what the hearings office will charge the Bureau for fiscal year 16 and represents 75% of the hearing costs to the auditor's office. Some bureaus are passing along some of those charges to the public in the form of an appeal fee. So here's some of the differing amounts bureaus pass on, and it shows kind of the full spectrum with police not charging any fee at all, going all the way up to a full cost recovery fee for water, environmental services, parks, and developmental services. For those bureaus passing along 100% of the internal charges, that means in order to access the appeal process, the individual member of the public has to pay for all the costs associated with the hearing. That includes things like judge's salary, rent, electricity, office supplies. So I want to give you a real case example of the sort of thing that happens under our current system. My office heard from a woman who earns a living as a school bus driver. She was enrolled in the Utility Bill Low Income Discount Program, and this is a safety net program that allows a one-person household making less than $1,800 per month to receive a discounted bill. The Water Bureau rightfully wants to protect the program against fraud, and for this particular woman, the Water Bureau identified what they believed were some account discrepancies related to water consumption and number of household occupants. After conversations with her that did not resolve their concerns, the Bureau decided to terminate her from the discount program. This woman felt that the Bureau got it wrong and wanted to appeal. But to challenge her termination by appeal up through the hearings office, she would have to pay over $1,300 in appeal fees to the Bureau. And we're asking that amount from someone the city knows makes less than $1,800 per month. Now, to their credit, when I brought this issue to the Water Bureau and the Commissioner's attention, the Bureau agreed to set an interim fee of $50 until we could come up with a permanent fix, which is what we're proposing today. The current appeal fees are not just a problem for people who are low income, since many times the cost of the appeal fee is greater than the underlying amount in question. This slide shows an example of that happening. This is a sample letter issued by the Bureau of Environmental Services Enforcement Program. And a corporation, in this instance, discharged really terrible things into the waste stream in violation of their permit. And in this letter, the city is demanding compliance and proposing a $500 penalty. To challenge the penalty or get it reduced through the hearings office, the corporation would have to pay an appeal fee of over $1,300 to the Bureau. And even though the corporation could likely afford it and even get a full refund if it prevailed, it still would have to bet $1,300 to avoid losing up to $500.
Sorry, it's important, I think, we make clear what you just said, which is if a corporation, and I'm going to make a distinction later between corporations and individuals, if the corporation is successful in the appeal, then they get their appeal fee back in addition to whatever other damages they're eligible for.
So this slide takes the anecdotal observations a little further. You're looking at the number of nuisance abatement appeals over the last 10 years. And these come out of the Bureau of Development Services Code Enforcement Program. The red arrow marks the spot where the Bureau started imposing a full cost recovery appeal fee, which at the time was around $1,200. And you'll note that the introduction of the cost recovery fee corresponds with a pretty precipitous drop in the number of appeals to pretty much zero. The one appeal that you see for fiscal year 10, right where the red arrow is, was underway prior to the fee being adopted by council, so my guess is that it came in under the prior fee structure.
Do you happen to have the numbers for how many nuisance abatement citations were filed in those years?
I don't know the appeal rate. No, I don't have the base number.
I'm totally with you on the point of where you're going on this. I know that we cut, or the city cut, nuisance abatement staff during the recession, so that might be because we weren't actually citing people for as many nuisances.
Right. This is not established causation, but possibly a correlation. Exhibit B of your package with Title 22 revisions is the proposed solution to the hearings office appeal fee problem. The proposed revisions include setting a nominal fee cap for any appeals going to the hearings office under Title 22 and creating a low income waiver option for those who cannot afford even a nominal fee. So on this slide, I'm going to illustrate how this proposed ordinance and the auditor's companion budget ask would solve the funding structure problem that's driving these high fees. So going from the hearings office to the Bureau, this part of the equation is the budget ask. For code appeals to the hearings office, we want to stop using an internal cost recovery model and fund the hearings office with general fund dollars. This would eliminate the direct charge to the Bureau. Going from the Bureau to the public, this ordinance proposes to prohibit bureaus from separately charging a filing fee for appeals to the hearings office, and instead, the hearings office would charge no more than a nominal filing fee directly to the public. This revised structure would address both the financial barrier to bringing an appeal to the hearings office, and it would make it so that the bureaus would not have to absorb the cost of each appeal. Adopting this proposal would bring the city into conformance with what we've generally seen in other cities that have a similar hearings office and hear similar case types. For example, cities like Seattle, New York, Washington, D.C., and Cincinnati don't charge any appeal fee. Albuquerque was the one exception we found, which charges $50. The last thing I want to address is a consistent question about the ordinance that I've heard from bureaus in some of your offices. And that question is, will making appeals more accessible result in a flood of appeals, especially frivolous ones? We don't really know how many more people will appeal if the process is accessible, but we have a few reasons to believe that a flood of appeals is unlikely. Even without access barriers, appeals are burdensome and stressful. They require time, preparation, and sometimes money if somebody hires a lawyer. We also have examples within the city already of low-cost, well-noticed appeals that have not resulted in an overwhelming flood of appeals. Both vehicle tows and park exclusions are examples where the city provides notice of the right to appeal and does not charge any appeal fee. This slide shows the last 3 calendar years of data, and for both types of appeals, the appeal rate is less than 2%. So to borrow a quote from U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stevens regarding a similar floodgate of litigation concern, doing justice does not always cause the heavens to fall. That being said, even if there was a flood of appeals, erecting access barriers is an inequitable way to regulate appeal volume. Once an appeal right is created, it should be available to everyone who wants to use it. Instead, there are other more equitable ways to manage volume of appeals. On the front end, council can make sure that the appeal right is properly scoped. And on the back end, procedural rules and case management techniques are available to manage the flow. Council can also create targeted consequences for appellants that actually bring frivolous appeals. Finally, I think it bears mentioning that a lot of appeals wouldn't necessarily mean that it's too easy to appeal. Rather, loss of appeals might signal a problem with the policy's implementation, and that's information the Bureau could then use to improve city services. And with that, unless there are questions, I'll pass it over to Dante James.
I guess I have a question, and just a philosophical question. I think the access to justice question is obviously, in terms of my value system, very important. And reducing the barriers to people having the right to have a fair hearing. So uniform notice and done in a certain kind of way, I think, spot on. Reducing the cost and addressing what is really the inequity in the current way we structure it, where we tally up all of our costs and we divide it, so you know, in a certain way, and so we end up charging people more than they can afford to exercise a right. The concern that I have, though, is that is not that the average person would abuse this system, or that a low-income person who feels they've been mistreated is going to abuse the system. My concern is with the people that are abusing the system. And they tend to be large corporations that are big wrongdoers that go into these processes and as a result of their appeals impose enormous costs on the system in terms of staff time and administrative appeal time and hearing officer time. And I don't want to sound cynical, but I'll be cynical for a second. It's my impression that in a number of these cases, it is solely done in order to run the clock out and buy some time. These are not people for whom a reasonable fee structure is a barrier. And these are not people that end up asserting what we would all consider to be meritorious claims. In fact, if we had a Rule 11 for administrative claims, some of these people would be candidates for that. But what they do is they extend the clock, they prevent us from collecting, and along the way, not only do they not pay, which means other ratepayers have to subsidize their service, but they buy some time. And I see them qualitatively as different from the equitable argument you make about citizens wanting to have access to a hearing officer. So I just want to give you a chance to respond to that, because I'm not yet persuaded that one size fits all, even though I'm very persuaded by the equitable argument you're making as it applies to citizens, and particularly people who are of low income. So I welcome your thoughts on that.
So I'm not at all opposed to the idea of a tiered fee structure. I just couldn't come up with one that I thought wasn't over-inclusive. So one of the concerns we have is that the appeal fee shouldn't exceed the underlying amount in question. So for some of these cases I think that you're referring to, the average penalty is $250. So having a $1,300 appeal fee just doesn't seem to make rational sense to me. But having a sanction for frivolous appeals to target that bad behavior would make sense.
And I'll just give you, I think it's fair to put some more meat on the bones. A company or a large organization that says, we're not required to pay stormwater fees. Well, that's a big deal, and we can spend a lot of staff time and other resources, and a year later we can have a big bill that's mounting, and none of us really think that's a serious claim. Or the person that, to use a more recent example, deliberately bypassed a meter in order to save money, got caught on it, and then objected to the reasonable fee schedule, and so we had an extensive hearing on that and ultimately settled. I want to be careful that we don't create a perverse incentive for people like that to game the system when we're trying to correct, I think, another problem, which I agree with you on, which is removing the barriers for people that have every right to be heard and for whom now the fee structure is an impediment. So as we go through this discussion, I'd like to see if we can separate out the classes, because I think they are totally distinguishable.
I appreciate you raising the concern, although I'm not sure if I follow the scenario. If the current high fee scenario didn't dissuade what you or I would, in fact, did describe as a frivolous appeal by someone who was trying to game the system, then that still perpetrated an injustice for as long as that appeal was pending. And then the injustice was righted when they lost.
Not necessarily.
Well, we hope.
The most of them will go to court at that point or something else. But there's two principles. There's the principle of cost recovery.
Mm-hmm.
We can't offer this. We can't just give this service away to people. So it's one thing. It's one thing to have them exercise their rights. Another thing for us to, in effect, subsidize that right. And the current model, at least for folks, is structured to do some kind of cost recovery. I think it ends up punishing, it obviously punishes a whole class of people, and I think it's inequitable, has to be restructured. But I would hate to throw the baby away with the bathwater on this one, and making an effort to do cost recovery for people for whom the filing fee is not a barrier.
I don't want
those wrongdoers lumped in with everybody else, unless the city is prepared to pick up that cost of the general fund, and I'm going to just go on a limb and say, you might be skeptical of that, particularly if it ends up generating a lot more appeals, and therefore more general fund. But that's how I distinguish it. I think for companies that are wrongdoers, having them pay some kind of reasonable fee is not a problem, and it hasn't been a problem. It doesn't, as you point out, it doesn't discourage them from filing appeals, but it gives us an opportunity to do some cost recovery. For this whole class of people that it is a barrier, I think we have to rethink the whole system, and that's why I agree with the principle that she's articulating.
Yeah, well, Greg might be able to illuminate that a little bit from some of the cases that you've seen or the patterns of cases that you've seen. So, thank you.
I was curious what you envisioned when you said targeted. There could be targeted consequences for frivolous appeals. I guess any suggestions about what those would be and who makes that determination that an appeal is frivolous?
I think it might be something parallel to the Rule 11 sort of sanctions that Commissioner Fish mentioned. But I mean,
I'm not sure if I know what Rule 11 is.
Yeah, well, it's just a sanction for bringing frivolous claims. Right now, the hearings officer doesn't have that authority, and so that would have to be added to code if that were an option you'd want to consider. But I don't know.
The hearings officer right now doesn't have the authority to determine a claim as frivolous.
No, I'll tell you what a frivolous claim might look like, Dan. It might be someone who just says, I appeal, doesn't set forth a basis, consumes a lot of time, and is at some point unable to articulate a basis. And we want to discourage someone from thinking they can just do that without any consequence.
Yeah, no, I can understand that being frivolous, but there's probably a lot of shades to that, too.
So I think maybe a civil penalty could be assessed if a frivolous finding is made.
Is a Rule 11 something we can adopt at the city, or is this?
So council could adopt some version of sanctions for bringing frivolous claims.
Okay.
Other questions at this point? We should let you move on, because I bet we might even get some answers.
There, actually, I do. I want a reminder of what the budget ask was.
$56,000 and change.
All right. Yep. Who's next?
I guess that's me. Good afternoon, Council, Mr. Mayor. Dante James, the Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. I appreciate the invitation to be here today from the Ombudsman and the Auditor. When I first heard of this, I was astounded and shocked that the structure exists in the way that it does. Having been a hearing officer in the city of Denver for over 10 years, I have some idea of how this process can look. The city of Denver charges nothing for appeals. And so I think we're here today to talk about three things. One is transparency, one is accessibility, and the other is accountability. The transparency is simply notice. And I'm struck the fact that we had, in some sense, to defend the idea of giving notice with some staff who think that the idea of they don't want to give the wrong impression to a petitioner that they may prevail. That just makes no sense to me. Notice is given in some sense in some bureaus and not in others, so there's no consistency. So at the very least, we're trying to be consistent about how we do what we do in the city. The blessing and the curse of the city structure is that there can be inconsistencies across bureaus. So this seems to be one way to try to remedy that. In talking about accessibility, having sat here last night for most of the evening with you, to council's credit, you were all extremely concerned about the need for accessibility as it relates to taxi cabs and Uber. I would suggest that this is the same thing. It is about accessibility for everybody who are residents of this city and the opportunity to be able to access the rights and responsibilities of being a resident in the city of Portland and not be kept out of that. And too often, many of the folks who would be kept out are those who are low income, those who are people of color, those who are maybe English speaking as a second language, and those are the folks who may not be as savvy about the ways of the city and the way that it works. And so it is about accessibility, so I would encourage you to think about it more broadly in some sense. In terms of accountability, it provides the hearing officer with the authority to ensure best and fair outcomes and maybe the ability and authority to determine whether there is a frivolous action being brought. As I said, in Denver, there was no charge for an appeal from any bureaus. I heard plenty of storm and stormwater issues as well as other things. It's a matter of cost recovery versus equity. And so how do we balance that? I would ask you to really consider how you balance that. Is cost recovery more important, or how do we? What expense is it in relation to equity? What do we have to give up in order to do this well and do it right? We've all heard the assumptions of the flood of frivolous appeals, and Commissioner, I appreciate your concern as it relates to corporations versus regular residents, if you will. Having sat for a number of years, as I'm sure you'll hear here as well, there was not a flood, certainly, of residential petitioners. And the corporations I also didn't see in the same way. I can give you specific examples of cases that were heard that did not come out in their favor. But it was not necessarily as frivolous as one might think, and or their appeal would then go to district court, and they could take it however they wanted to take it. So I would suggest that we shouldn't allow the exceptions to swallow the rule, and to ensure that we're going to do what we best can do to provide consistency, accessibility, transparency, and accountability in doing this work in the city. So I think it really is a prime example of conversation about equity. And I certainly applaud the auditor's office for bringing this to light. And it is an issue, I think, of great importance as an example, a prime example of how do we ensure fairness that makes sense in relation to the structure of the city and cost recovery and all those things. So I would encourage you to very thoughtfully consider how we come to remedy this. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Greg?
Mr. Mayor and members of council, my name is Greg Frank, and I have proudly been the city code hearings officer since the early 2000s. It is a privilege to sit in that chair and render the decisions and oversee the cases that I do. The hearings office is somewhat unique, maybe not to you, but certainly to the rest of the city, and that is that I make decisions because you tell me exactly what to do. You tell me what cases that I can hear. You tell me what rules to use in which to make the decisions. And by inference, you also tell me who, in some respects, doesn't get access to the cases that I hear and the rules that you make. Dante referenced Uber. My guess is that somewhere, shape, or form in Uber, you probably put my office. We do a lot of limited transportation cases, a lot by our standards is 4 or 5, maybe a year. I will tell you that most of the people that appear before us in those transportation cases are taxi drivers. They are not rich. They are not well-to-do. Their net worths are not going to make up much. And it's expensive for them to come and fight for their livelihood, and it's important for them, and that's why we see them, I believe. So what we're really talking about here today is you're telling me what cases you want me to hear, and you're telling me what rules I should apply and who's going to hear them, or who's going to have access. That's the bottom line. I don't decide that. I don't decide cases the way I want. I don't decide the cases the way I wish. I decide cases because you give me the rules under which to make those decisions. The modifications you're asking for today, quite honestly, if you ask me from a professional standpoint, I really don't care if they pass or don't pass. Our office will continue to exist and continue to make decisions whether or not you pass these. But if you ask me from a personal note whether or not I think it's fair, whether or not I think it's right, then I believe that excluding anyone from the access to our office if they disagree with a decision I think is probably improper. So that's really all I'm really concerned about. Margie brought up the $1,300 fee. I agree with Commissioner Fish, quite honestly, that the way we calculate fees could be done so differently. It does account for hard cases and easy cases. But as it stands now, with the way it's structured in the bureaus, $1,300 when you're looking at a nuisance abatement case of $200 or $300 or $400 isn't fair. If we're looking at a Water Bureau case of $200 or $300 or $400, I would guess that if I asked any one of you whether or not you're willing to bet $1,300 to win $250 in any game of chance, you'd probably walk away and say, I'm not willing to do that. Unless your principles are really, really strong. The way it's structured now, it's a deterrent, but it's in some cases, it's an absolute bar. If you're low income and you can't pay that appeal fee, it doesn't matter if it's refunded or not, you're simply not going to appeal. I'm anticipating that there's going to be a number of questions. And Commissioner Fish, you brought up some really good points that I think you and I could have a discourse probably for 2 or 3 hours with the points you raised with the ombudsman. But what I'm going to conclude is when I was back in school up in Seattle, I had a meeting with somebody that I respect eminently, and that was Justice William O. Douglas of the U.S. Supreme Court. He's from Washington, and is kind of a backwoods guy up there, and he sat around with about 14 or 15 of us. And so I'm going to give you a quote, which I believe is also on the federal courthouse over here, and that is, the liberties of none are safe unless the liberties of all are protected. And quite honestly, I think that is totally relevant to what we're talking about here, and I'd like to keep that in mind as we go through. I'll be available for questions.
Thank you.
Do you have an opinion about professionally about this concept of giving you the power in rare cases to essentially fine someone for bringing a frivolous case?
No problems. Let's go back to what I said to start with. You tell me the rules under which I'm going to make the decisions. I have not met with city attorney and asked whether or not there's any prohibition to that, but I am now allowed under Title 22, that's my title, in code cases to assess civil penalties up to $1,000 per day on code violations. We had one, had a hearings officer, forgot to put the end date on it, but it got into the close to $100,000. So although we're just the City of Portland Hearings Office, you have given me the authority to assess up to $1,000 a day in civil penalties. I have no problems in number one, so long as there's some criteria to determine frivolous, which the courts have. If I determine something's frivolous, I have no problems whatsoever in assessing a civil penalty for that.
And you currently have the authority to apply statutory interest?
No, I do not.
And why is that?
Because you haven't given it to me. I am a unique being, the office is. We don't have any more power than you give me. You give it to me, then I can answer you, yes, I do.
So one potential benefit of statutory interest is it keeps pace with inflation, and it at least keeps the clock running for someone who's attempting to bring an appeal just for delay's sake. So there. Is that administratively workable if we gave you that instruction?
It is administratively workable from my perspective, and that is simply the decision maker's perspective. How it works with the administration at the auditor's office about collecting that money or where it goes from there, that's beyond my purview.
Of course, we do in the utilities, we have a different tool for an aid of collection that's the last resort, which is we can shut off someone's water. If they don't pay and they don't assert a claim, and we very rarely do that, but it is a slightly different tool.
I like the idea.
Interest?
No, well, both actually, but I like the idea of giving him the authority to declare appeals frivolous.
there's very well-defined standards in the courts, common law standards and statutory standards, so we wouldn't have to make it up. And we could also make clear that it applies in unique circumstances. We would never want to create a penalty system that says just because someone's, you know, uninformed or didn't do a very good job that they could be subject to a fine. Have to be someone that you really could say you really should have known better. I asked you several times to frame your claim. You didn't. You're just wasting time. You deliberately, you know, violate the rules. And at some point, there has to be a sanction for that. I don't know what that would be, but I don't know how you structure it. But
it's worth exploring if the statutory basis is there.
I also think interest in some circumstances is reasonable, and actually the city charges interest on arrears, and I'm a little surprised to hear that we don't have that, we're not doing that now, because I think it is one way to keep people honest that owe money and are just gaming the system.
Any other questions or any closing comments from our panel here before we take any other testimony?
No, I'd be happy to introduce the guests that we've invited.
You have some folks lined up, please.
Rex Burkholder is a former Metro Councilor, you may know, and he will describe his experience with the appeals system in its current state. And we have Janice Thompson of the Citizens Utility Board, Kristen Chambers of the National Lawyers Guild, and Mary McWilliams of the League of Women Voters.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Would you like me to get started while the others are showing?
Go ahead, Rex.
Great. My name is Rex Burkholder. Live at 2824. Now I'm nervous. 2824 Southeast Jamil. And I'm here today as a customer of yours, but also a citizen, to tell you a story about how my experiences with one of the bureaus of the city and the lack of notice and lack of ability to make an appeal. And then the process I went through to try to resolve that and met up with the Ombudsman and the Office of the Auditor. I am here to urge you to adopt these recommendations, and so I'm going to tell you my story and try not to get too emotional about it. It began in the summer of 2013 when my neighbor across the street had a sewer failure. Her sewer ran through her backyard, through a neighboring property to Southeast Belmont Street. And she had the city come out, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and try to figure out how do we solve this problem. And the BES's solution was to put a new sewer line down Southeast Jamhill to replace an existing private line that served my house and my neighbor's house, and then to inform us after the decision was made that we now owe $5,000. So I was being asked to replace an existing working system with something new that wasn't necessary to me and paid the same amount as my neighborhood has failed sewer. So I disagreed with this solution. I asked the simple question, well, can we talk about this and talk about what shared responsibility? Where's my responsibility? How do I go through those steps? And I was told there is no appeal process. The staff person working on the project itself, okay? And so, you know me, I'm probably one citizen that knows about public process pretty well and knows a lot of people. And so I said, well, I'll just call the next level up and keep working my way through it. And I've worked my way up the bureau hierarchy until I reached the former BES director, Dean Marriott, and told each level, there is no appeal process, you just have to pay it. And so in frustration, I said, well, I guess I have to hire a lawyer. And Director Marriott said, well, we have more than you can ever afford. So I did speak to a lawyer, and they read the code, and they just said, you're going to lose because it's all written, so the Bureau is always right. But I still felt there should be a clear way for a citizen to appeal, to petition his government, his or her government. And I was connected with the city ombudsman. And so the ombudsman, she gave me some code that said, well, try this, which was to go to the hearings officer. I was not told that it was going to cost money, so that didn't stop me. And for some reason, I never got a bill from the city for this one, I guess. But I went to the
hearing. Put your address back in the record.
Put your address in. Put your record.
So we went to the hearings officer, and the hearings officer, well, at the first hearing, no one showed up from BES. The second hearing, the hearings officer heard the case and said basically that this code that was taking me to the hearings officer was actually not applicable in my case. But he also, Mr. Frank, also let the BES staff know that there should be a clear statement of what the appeal process is, because there is a review committee process. Well, I went to that review committee. It was made up of staff who all said, you owe the money, just pay. So, but the end of this, it's not really the money, okay? I wrote the check, and I did my part. But the fact that here, a very sophisticated consumer of government services, myself, and someone who knows how the system works very well, was totally frustrated with the simple question of, can I sit down with you and talk about what is what I think is an appropriate amount for me to pay to solve someone else's problem, and let's have a discussion. And I was told time and time and time again, you have no rights to petition on this one. You have no rights to appeal. There is no process. And yes, if you want to sue us, go ahead, but we'll just use your money to fight you back. So that was disturbing to me, to find a bureaucracy that was so arrogant and so fearful of conversations with its citizens that there's no way of having an appeal there, or that appeal is so hidden. It took me going through the city's auditor's office and the ombudsman to find that appeal route, and then unsuccessfully. So I am, again, urging you, please make this a consistent, accessible, transparent process so people can actually have a way to ask questions that are legitimate, have a discussion, and get their concerns addressed in an appropriate manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Who would like to go next? Yeah, just push the button on the bottom there. There you go.
Janice Thompson, Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. I submitted a memo that I think is in your packet.
Yes.
So the timely notice issue, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. But it hasn't been in place, as you just heard, and it really needs to be consistent. In terms of the one other element of this is the challenge of identifying like which ordinance and which administrative rule applies also needs to be made clearer. It just isn't appropriate to have that be left up to the individual person trying to navigate the system. And obviously that's a particular concern for Portlanders who may not have access to technology or be really familiar with its use, and for whom English is not first language. In terms of the timely appeal, I think it also speaks to a need for a little bit of a mind shift. Instead of thinking like, oh, these are hassles, that these are opportunities to learn and improve procedures and programs. From there, the third part of the memo I'll just let you take a look at, but it just outlines potentially the need beyond the utility bureaus, which is CUB's focus, for some consistent citywide review of things, and puts kind of maps it out visually with this dispute resolution kind of pyramid approach. In terms of the, but I think that's, as in, cause this came up when Margie was giving her presentation, and it kind of is, it's the way, it speaks to just how certain things have evolved in different bureaus, and somebody taking a step back might make sense. Again, not quite, CUB's going to continue to focus on the utility bureaus, but just from this experience, a thought for some citywide review. So I really want to focus on just the need to revamp how the code hearings office is paid for with appeals, and this is kind of ties in with the nominal fee presentation under discussion today, as well as the previous budget request for the less than 57,000 or whatever. So it just seems like the three items have to be reconciled here and are best addressed by just shifting to general fund support for these categories of fees. is we have this, you know, inconsistency in how Portlanders are charged, these high fees, but then also putting the pressure appropriately on the agencies to be fiscally responsible. And so it's reconciling those three points that is challenging, and the cost recovery approach just is not always applicable, because in this case it applies that fiscal responsibility piece, but creates these other problems. So I think this does go hand in hand with the earlier discussion you had related to the auditor's budget. And which I think it should also be noted is for a year change. I mean, it's like let's have a test period. This whole notion of frivolous appeals is to be taken seriously. I think it needs to be recognized that there's very much in the eye of a beholder dynamic, and that the legal, as has been mentioned already, there's the legal world and other sources of information or of other sources of ways to address, you know, the potential for frivolous, and it shouldn't just be like, oh, we have too many frivolous appeals now, we're just going to slap back those higher fees. The other thing I want to highlight is that if indeed the increased number of appeals end up being consistently upheld by the code hearings officer, that I think there really is potential that a need to evaluate the underlying administrative rules. I mean, and Rex's situation is the same. I too have had some calls with people, and when they really take a look, it's like, well, it's not even a matter of it being a financial barrier. The stack is decked. Deck is stacked, excuse me. And it's like, well, why should I appeal? And that's a problem, too. The sweet spot in there is not may not always be being reached. CUB is supportive of the idea of having a fee structure and a differentiation between residential and other kinds of customers, and highlight one element of that with regards to BES. But in general, I think the overall goal of this initiative by the auditor and the ombudsman is sound, and even if, you know, with the caveats I've mentioned, opening the door for some potential tweaks, movement on this is recommended.
So you specifically suggested a $50 minimum fee instead of $25.
I think the 25 is okay. It might be a little low. And I just highlight that, you know, as was mentioned, as an interim step, the Water Bureau is now kind of eating, you know, the difference. But they have now shifted to a $50 fee, and so touching base with them could help evaluate that. At the very least, you know, there should be a low income waiver option.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. My name is Kristen Chambers, and I'm here on behalf of the National Lawyers Guild. And we support the auditor's proposal in full today. It's been apparent to me through listening to your questions and comments that you are already on board with agreeing that the current system is not providing fair access to all Portlanders. So I won't beat that point home. I will make a few points. So I've also provided some written testimony for you today that you can look at in more detail. I would like to mention, though, that I think when there's a fee that is more than the amount in controversy for an appeal, that in essence is creating a penalty for filing a complaint. And while I understand that you can obtain that money returned to you if you prevail, when we're looking at the average Portland citizen who is probably not a lawyer and is probably not being represented by a lawyer, they may not know what's frivolous. They may not know whether they have any basis to stand upon based on the rules, and they may find that out by appealing and learning more about the process. And so to penalize them before they've even gone through the process, by the chance that they might be wrong in a good-intentioned way, is really to their disadvantage. Secondly, I'd like to follow up on some of this discussion of frivolous complaints. I would like to discourage you from lumping all corporations into one bunch if you do decide to have a different fee for them. I think corporations come in all shapes and sizes, and I don't know what the rate of abuse has been of the system by corporations, but I would hope that it's not a large percentage of them. And so it seems like that problem could be more appropriately remedied by looking at particular consequences for those who are abusing the system. One consideration might be screening complaints more early on, or having certain requirements that when you appeal, you have to say more than "I appeal," which could be important.
What do you think of a sliding scale? I mean, in most of the legal world, particularly in private dispute resolution, there's a sliding scale based on the amount of the claim. So I'm guessing most of the work we do these days is arbitration, not courts. And the arbitration has a sliding scale based on the amount in controversy. And I by no means of lumping all companies into the wrongdoer category, but since the equity argument here is access to judgment, access to justice, I just want to be sure that people that otherwise have access, plenty of it, high-paid lawyers, and the ability to raise constitutional arguments about whether they have to pay stormwater fees are not necessarily subsidized by the taxpayers indefinitely. And that's my concern. And we are getting claims like that. We're getting people, the arts tax now, it's more prevalent that people are raising constitutional arguments as to why we can't impose that tax. We're now hearing arguments about whether it's legal to apply a stormwater fee for off-site stormwater management. These are important issues, and people have a right to be heard, but I wonder whether a sliding scale, I get the point about saying the fee shouldn't be more than the claim, but I wonder if it's inequitable to say, I mean, we do have a progressive income tax. What if it's, is it inequitable to say that if it's a $250,000 claim, you have to contribute something towards the cost? That's the point I'm trying to make.
I don't know that it matters so much what the amount in controversy is in terms of the sliding scale, because that's not factoring in the accessibility of being able to pay. So, for example, I'm a civil litigator, and in my world, we do have sliding fees, scale fees, on what we have to pay based on the amount in controversy. However, my firm does a lot of plaintiff's lawyer work, and we work on a contingency fee where we often pay all the costs up front and take all the risk, because otherwise our client couldn't afford to pursue it. So I think there's a real distinction there between how much the claim is and the individual's ability to pay. And also, it sounds like, again, I'm not fully aware of the extent of the problem here, but it sounds like you're talking about some specific corporations that are repeat offenders that are using this tactic again and again, or it's something that's easily identifiable and you kind of know what's going on. And I'm wondering if that is something either as part of the screening process or as part of the analysis by the hearings officer, that he could have authority to sanction that for up to the total amount of the cost of the process, maybe more if it's a repeat violation, to help fund the services for other people. If there are really businesses that are using this for improper means and can afford to pay it, and that's really not the issue. The last thing I'd like to touch on is what the real value of an appeal is to an individual, whether they're doing it on their own or whether part of a corporation, assuming that they're doing it for the right reasons. And I think an important component of access to justice is procedural justice. In other words, the perception of the person who is appealing that they are participating in a fair process. And a huge aspect of that is being able to just be heard. We know this is very valuable instinctively, and also there have been studies that have been shown that people